Welcome to Sharp Sharp. Today is the 6th of May, Wednesday the 6th of May. And Zooks, it's been a fascinating week. There are lots of things to talk about. We've got the fuel price. We've got, you know, Freedom Day last week and some worrying signs for democracy. And perhaps the biggest story for me this week was a crocodile eating somebody in the Komati River. That's a wild story, right?
Jesus, Rob. What a week. You know, I grew up in the Transkei. We've got big rivers there, Tina River, Tsitsa River, Umzimvubu River, which actually flows into Port St. John's. So those rivers, the meandering part of the rivers, go past around our villages where we look after cattle, etc. And cattle, funny enough, are really good swimmers. I learned that when I was very young. You have a river that's full and overflowing, and cattle still go across, and you would be stuck on the other side. So we had to learn to swim. I'm actually a very, very good swimmer.
Especially people, crocodiles.
When I go to the beach, people get shocked because this 100-kilogram man swimming, and you're thinking, I need lifeguards. Yeah, I'm actually very good at swimming. But the scariest thing for me has always been coming across a crocodile. Good Lord.
Have you come across crocodiles swimming across the river? Then?
Well, luckily, there are no crocodiles in the Eastern Cape. You actually have crocodiles in KZN.
Sent to political office.
Oh, yeah. We have lots of those. But yeah, you've got crocodiles in KZN, Mpumalanga. Actually, it's funny. In the south of KZN, you actually start getting warnings. Just as you drive up from Port Shepstone, you start getting warnings that possible crocodiles could be crossing the road, etc. So crocodiles are quite predominant in KZN rivers and Mpumalanga.
Well, this was a guy whose car apparently got stranded trying to cross the Komati River, and he, left the car obviously to try and get out of it, and disappeared. So the police found this crocodile. They isolated a group of crocodiles, and they believed that one of them looked like he'd eaten a man. So the police went and shot this one crocodile, and then there's fantastic footage of them lifting this crocodile up, and it's a beast. It's 4.5 meters long. It's 500 kilograms. I don't know if you're trying to swim across a river when you come across a crocodile chasing you that's, 4.5 meters long. That's not something you want to experience ever in your life.
I actually always wondered whether crocodiles can run and run very fast on land, because during the rainy seasons in Limpopo, some of the rivers just overflow and crocodiles go into the villages. You could be walking, coming from a tavern, and here comes a crocodile. there've been a lot of footage actually in Limpopo of people coming across crocodiles when the rivers are overflowing.
So I was in St. Lucia up in KZN when hippos walked through the streets. So would you prefer to have a crocodile walking through the streets or a hippo? I mean, probably neither, but if you had to pick one of them?
No doubt, Rob, I would choose a crocodile over a hippo. I've seen those hippos walking in town. Actually, you've got it, especially when it's a mother hippo and a baby. Yeah. Those things are very dangerous. And funny enough, a hippo can run.
Yeah.
You think you can? You look at the size of that thing. You're thinking, I can outrun it. No chance in hell. That thing can run. I would choose a crocodile any day.
Bad tempered as well. Well, let's get on to the crocodiles that are now eating through our pockets in the form of fuel price hikes. Zooks, we've had massive fuel price hikes this week. Petrol is up now towards, what is it, 226 rand a litre. Diesel's now 32 rand a litre. And paraffin is now gone up to 28 rand a litre. Now, paraffin is something that I think the middle classes don't really use very much. But in the townships and rural areas, paraffin's a massive thing.
We are about to get into what is so-called a fire season in townships, in shanty towns across South Africa. And that's largely because of the use of paraffin, but also people use it to heat up, put up the paraffin heater and you fall asleep or somebody trips, whatever happens. But the damage is always unbelievable. 100,000 sheds burned down, etc. In winters, where I'm going to with this, Rob, is that the poorest of the poor depend on paraffin for heating. Everything is just beyond their affordability. I bought electricity last week. I paid 500 rand for 101 units. I was shocked.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
I was shocked. 500 rand for electricity has gone up 600%. You know, so when you look at paraffin, who's using paraffin? Poorest of the poor. For lighting, many homes that don't have electricity. We say we've got electricity, 90% of South Africa. 10% of South Africa that doesn't have electricity, or just under 10%, is still a lot. It's still a lot, and it's the poorest of the poor.
And, you know, a story on Scroller this week talked about how the average household that uses, say, 20 litres of paraffin a month would have spent 585 rand a month now, including paraffin, and that's up 85 rand. It's up nearly 20% over the course of a month. I mean, that's a massive cost for the poorest households to bear.
That's crazy, Rob. But that's the reality. Where I come from, just about every home has got a lot of equipment that uses paraffin. I mean, we already have electricity, but you always keep these things in the background because it's the cheapest way. You know, just getting now a truck load of wood for firewood in my village in Mount Frere, it's actually about 1,500 rand, you know, just to buy that. So it's priced beyond anyone's affordability, which means that paraffin is the option, you know. So people always keep paraffin there. But also the paraffin heater is probably the cheapest heater you can get in South Africa. It's quite effective. It warms the home. You can put... you can boil water on top of it. You can cook your steamed bread. These are things that we cook at home. You can actually use it for baking bread as well. So, you know, it's got a double function. Rob, but also the stove is probably the paraffin stove. It's probably the cheapest stove you can get, you know. So everything that uses paraffin is actually cheap, making people to depend on paraffin. But what really concerns me, Rob, about paraffin is that there really is no standard price for paraffin in South Africa. You can have the regulated price, but by the time they buy it at the retail price in Mount Frere and then send it to my village at the local spaza shop, that paraffin from town to Mount Frere has gone up significantly, 5 rand to 10 rand per litre.
So you have sort of a regulated price of 28 rand a litre, but people in villages are paying 34 rand a litre, which is massively more expensive.
Yes, in my town it's about 34 rand 50. That is in town. By the time you get to the spaza shop in the village, you're looking at 40 rand a litre. It's gone crazy, Rob.
Well, we have a situation where, you know, these are prices that come to us because of the war in Iran. The oil price has gone crazy. It's now $110 a barrel. You know, and to some extent, we are victims of the global circumstance. But to another extent, people like the AA, the Automobile Association, believes government should do far more to ease this price load. They have reduced the fuel levy to some extent, but you know, we're still paying 2 rand 18 for the road accident fund, the most dysfunctional fund, and that's a long list, the most dysfunctional fund in the country. You know, why are we, there is certainly scope to look at the structure of the fuel price, right? We don't need to be paying all these extra taxes, especially at a time like this.
Yeah, Rob, you know, I've been asking myself, like, why isn't paraffin just 10 rand a litre? No one uses it. The whole country doesn't use paraffin. You've got people who are almost 30 now in middle-class homes will tell you that I've never used paraffin, you know. So really, this thing should seriously be discounted. Bring it down to 10 rand, you know. I mean, you're charging pensioners here. Really, you're charging pensioners and villagers. I can't say this enough. But Rob,
so the government should be subsidizing the paraffin price as opposed to taxing it extra.
I don't care what they do, but bring it down to the price of those who are using it. I'm not using paraffin, you know. You are not using paraffin, you know. But the people who use paraffin have no other choice. How can it be more expensive than anything else out there when it's used by people who have no choice? Imagine, Rob, when an entire community loses a transformer in Joburg. Just in Gauteng, we had over 240 communities that have lost transformers. These get stolen, they get vandalized, they blow up because people in their backyards have actually put in another 10 families in their backyards. So the transformer can no longer cope. It blows up. You don't have a transformer for 6 months. What are those people using? They're using paraffin.
So, I mean, South Africa is quite a resilient society. We absorb a lot of shocks, and we have done for ages. But the truth is that, you know, you see fuel prices going through the roof. We have 42% unemployment at the widest definition, including people who've given up looking for jobs. You know, we have a massive amount of people who can't afford power anymore. You have the paraffin price going up. for the poorest of the poor. You have electricity prices going through the roof as well. You said you got hardly anything for what you put into the, you know, prepaid electricity.
Yeah, this is madness, Rob. But as you are reflecting, road accident fund, that thing, Rob, shouldn't they take that thing out over R2? Take it out.
Yeah,
you know, people generally see it as a lotto. You know, there are people who actually line up the streets and wait for your car to come through, and they throw themselves at the road. Can you imagine the shock of it, just the trauma of it, hitting somebody with a car? You get traumatized just hitting a dog with a car. You stop and you really, if you were a smoker, you would say, I need a smoke. But you do need to take time to realize that you've killed something. You know, so imagine a human being and people just doing this thing just for the road accident fund.
You know, we saw riots, well, protests at Megawatt Park, Eskom's head office this week. People from Soweto saying that we need to have a flat rate for electricity in the townships. They wanted a flat rate. It's 350 Rand for power in the townships. Eskom has said that's unaffordable. But the truth is people can't afford power in their homes. They can't afford them in any sense. And that leads to mass dissatisfaction. Are we not building towards a situation where there's the potential for a real, I suppose, you don't want to throw around the word revolution, but a civil revolution ahead of the November election?
Yeah, this thing about a flat rate, Rob, they've been talking about it for a long time. I tell you, right now, Soweto owes Eskom billions of rands. A lot of people are not paying for the power, so they are stealing the power. So if you've got thousands of homes that were stealing the power, saying, can we now pay a flat rate? Start negotiating the flat rate. You know, don't throw it away. 350 from Soweto, where there are 2 million people living there. Can you imagine? That is money in the bank as opposed to no money at all. You can actually rebuild the infrastructure and negotiate going forward. Because right now in Soweto, there's no money to actually build the infrastructure, buy these transformers that we are talking about, you know, and remove all of the illegal infrastructure, because now it's so expansive, it has become a huge network. To remove it is just going to cost a lot of money. I would say start discussing the flat rate.
That's definitely a great idea. I think that actually needs to happen. It definitely hasn't happened in the past. Eskom has taken a resolute view that, like, no, you must pay the same electricity as the rest of the country. But like you say, if people aren't paying, there's nothing to lose for Eskom. There's only something to gain.
And exactly, Rob. We've got to first get the culture of paying. If you've had 30 years of a culture of stealing, you need to start getting the culture of paying. And a flat rate is just the beginning of that particular process.
To talk about something slightly different, I mean, you know, we had Freedom Day last week, which is the commemoration of the April 27th election back in 1994. And what I find really fascinating is there was a recent survey by the Human Sciences Research Council, which talked about people's attitude towards democracy 32 years on, and it seems like there's a massive disenchantment with our democracy. And part of it is, like you say, you know, people are struggling economically. They can't afford power. They don't have jobs. And what I, you know, the finding that really stood out to me is that popular support for democracy has fallen from about, you know, it was around 65%, 66% in the mid-2000s, and it's now 36% this year. It shows there's a massive disenchantment that democracy hasn't brought the gains that the ANC said it would in 1994, that people expected, which leads to a kind of a rejection of democracy. Is this something that you see very much? I mean, it certainly is tangible in surveys like this.
Yeah, Rob, I mean, it's one's experience of democracy. I mean, we can sit here and theorize about what should happen, what should not happen, but people interact with democratic institutions every single day. People go to Home Affairs, they get a certain treatment, they go to the local police station to report a possible rape, etc., and police are laughing at them, ask all sorts of questions, you know, and that's how people at first value interact with democracy. You know, when you've got a problem, the first representative of the state is a police officer. If that police officer does not recognize that not only does he represent the criminal justice system, he actually is that person's first interaction with democracy, with a democratic state. You know, he doesn't recognize the responsibility he has. And if he doesn't do the job properly, that person begins to lose faith in democracy. Now, you can go to local government, people's experience with local municipalities, with local councillors, just from the local councillor in your region who's busy selling RTP houses to friends, getting EPWP, expanded public works program, employees to his family and all of that. I tell you, in our region, you get a whole list of people who are supposed to get fuel, that is paraffin, for free, like my grandmother. They are on that list. And a councillor has got 20 people from his family in that list. So all those 20-liter paraffin things, they actually go to mostly to his family, you know, and they don't go to the correct recipient. If you look at Eskom has got an indigent list. In every single municipality, those indigent people qualify for a certain amount of electricity.
Yeah.
They are not given that. They are not given that job. They are buying electricity, even though they are registered as indigent people.
But that's a subversion of democracy more than anything else. I mean, it's like when you had water shortages.
Yeah.
And you had water tankers going around and the people getting the water and having huge, huge shed loads of water being delivered to their houses were the politicians. That's not democracy. That's a subversion of what it should be. But it does lead to a wider loss of faith in what democracy should be.
Well, it is what you see. It is what you experience.
Exactly, yeah, yeah.
You know, it's not what is in the textbook, Rob. I mean, if you look at the outcome of elections, local government election, it's always far, 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 far lower. You know, the last one was 45% for local government 2021. And
the voter turnout. Yeah.
The voter turnout. When you compare, the voter turnout of 2024 national election was the lowest at 58%. That tells you people are not showing up. You've got over 23 million people in the voters' roll, but come voting day, people just choose not to vote. Some people actually are saying, well, what is the point of voting? I've been voting for so long. People are not even considering changing their vote. They just say, we have been voting for so long. And nothing is happening. They are not saying we've been changing our votes to a different party and all of that. That's another thing, Rob. Point is that democracy is about your experience, and somebody who's had a bad experience of it is not going to be very confident in it. And millions of people in South Africa are getting a bad experience of it every single day, from people who are stealing money, public money, people interacting with potholes. You could work your life to buy your first Mercedes Benz and go down the road and hit both tires, tires costing you at 5,000 rand each, you're not going to be a very happy man, Rob.
Don't buy a Mercedes Benz. Buy a Vespa, man.
You don't work a lifetime.
Job might be better work, China. It'll be great, huh? But, you know, the danger of this HSRC survey, I mean, they talked about this rise of political fatalism, exactly what you talk about, where one in three people now say, it actually doesn't matter what kind of government we have. We still get the same results. That's fatalism. You don't think it'll change at all. And that's the danger. And also what it does is it enables these strongman leaders, the kind of the Donald Trumps, the Jacob Zumas. You know, you look towards somebody who you think is just a strongman leader to take control because the existing systems don't work. And that leads to kind of a populist rush to the bottom, right?
Absolutely, Rob. Look at what we are having now in South Africa. Actually, most of our parties for a long time have been built around strong individuals.
Herman Mashaba.
Not very strong, but yeah, he's Herman Mashaba. But I'm talking about people like Inkosi Mangosuthu Buthelezi.
Yes.
Now that's a powerful guy who ran the IFP with quite a strong fist for a very long time. People would say that at the time it was necessary. You know, one was glad to actually see the transfer of power from him to Shabisa now, the president of the IFP. But even in the ANC, Nelson Mandela's were powerful guys. Or Tambo's were powerful guys. You know, then MK Party is built around Jacob Zuma. It doesn't look like they're going to have a president as long as Zuma is alive, who's not Jacob Zuma. You know, that's a structure that's built around a powerful person. They're not even interested in going to an election of their own representative. You know, tough guys.
But so what does that mean? I mean, we now have the selection date for November the 5th. What does that mean for the political party? Is that unless you have a strong individual, you don't have much of a character to you? I mean, if the institutions and the faith in democracy and the institutions of governance are failing, what does that mean for the parties? Just, I suppose, lower voter turnout is the obvious one, but as well, a greater shift towards populism?
Yeah, we'll see, Rob, what happens. I mean, the DA is about to lose, now we didn't talk about strong women, is about to lose a strong woman or redeploy a very strong woman to become mayor of Joburg. If she wins, she'd probably do a great job for Joburg, etc. But what happens?
The city in the country needs to be revitalized, so give it to Helen Zille.
Absolutely. But what happens to the DA? You know, that's what we're going to see, whether people will actually follow the model of the DA being effective, good in governance, or whether people will question strongly who is Jordan Hill Lewis, you know, and if Gogo is not around, can we still trust a Jordan Hill Lewis, you know? So we're going to see what's going to happen. But if you look even in small parties, Bantu Olomisa's party, UDM, he's been in power since 96, 97, you know, and it's not much of a party. They've got less than 2% of the vote. You know, you can go to ACDP, Kenneth Meshu, he's been there for a lifetime. Powerful guys in very small parties, you know. So we are very much about the individual, you know. I mean, you, there's no way you can justify how MK party got 15% of the national vote and 45% of the vote in KZN, apart from the powerful individual that is Jacob Zuma.
Okay, to move to something completely different. I mean, you're talking about institutions being frayed and the trust in public, the public trust in institutions fraying. We've seen NSFAS. It's the student funding body. It was, you know, this is a body that is supposed to give bursaries out to students, and it now gives, you know, bursaries to 1.2 million people a year to go and study, and it has a revenue budget of like 60 billion rand a year, right? I mean, this was now placed under administration. It's a disaster again. Now, this institution came from, you know, a couple of years ago, before Jacob Zuma said that all students must have free university education. It was a small little body. It gave bursaries to people, 10 billion rand. It's now increased fivefold how much money it has, sixfold. And it can't seem to manage itself. It's under administration again. Is that just another example of institutional lack of trust that you mentioned in these things? They're just unable. It's like the Road Accident Fund. It can't sustain itself.
Yeah, there was always going to be a problem with NSFAS, Rob, because you get the impression that the ANC and ANC government tended to think that it's something that can be run by graduates of the ANC Youth League.
Employees, cadres.
If you look at the NYDA, for instance, which is supposed to fund young people's business and entrepreneur aspirations and all of that, all you get there is graduates of the ANC Youth League. They get put into the NYDA. It's got billions in the budget. No one gets any funding. God knows what happens to the money. Mm. So you've got problems like that. Now, if you go to NSFAS right now, it's the same story. You know, the minister, right, the current minister, is a graduate of the Young Communist League.
Puti Manamela.
Puti Manamela. You know, again, we're having the same story, Rob. Like you are saying, now the money has gone up significantly, in 60 billion rand. You know, this is no small change, Rob.
And it's gone. It's been, you know, it was under administration a few years ago. It came out of administration. It had a fairly strong board. And then in the last couple of months, you know, the chairperson resigned. Three more directors resigned. It's again in chaos. And what Buti Manamela, the higher education minister, does is he appoints this person formerly from SARS to now handle it, Klingani Matabula. He's now in charge of fixing NSFAS. This person who was in charge of SARS's governance, appointed by Tom Moyane in 2016 and who ultimately left under a cloud again in 2019. Is this an example of what you're talking about? Is that, you know, someone like Buti Manamela from the ANC Youth League appoints the wrong person with a patchy track record of governance to fix something with governance problems? Isn't this exactly the wrong solution?
You don't even get the impression, Rob, that they are making a mistake when they appoint certain people. You actually get the impression that it's actually deliberate. If you look at that Department of Higher Education and how they were hiring directors and in sitters, You know, the previous minister was kicked out for that. Buddy Manemela came through and actually did exactly the same thing, hiring people who were quite problematic, who came from the political background. I remember that there was Gwede Mantashe's son also involved in these sitters. You can see, Rob, that this department for a long time has been seen as some kind of quiet cash cow, you know, for, like I said, ANC Youth League and ANC graduates.
We had, you know, one of the things that happened in Nespas is you had lots of ghost students who were getting bursaries to go and study, but they didn't actually exist. And that's the way in which something like Nespas was looted out of billions, which is essentially taxpayer money. It's just a lack of accountability. And that's led people, you know, in Treasury to say, let's just abolish this. Let's just abolish the student funding body. It doesn't work, and start from scratch. Surely that's what we should do at this point.
Yeah, look, Nespas is being looted from the bottom to the top. And I tell you, Rob, when they say it rose from the head, they're not messing around, you know. And when people can see that there is no accountability at the top, you can be sure that from the bottom, they're just going to start looting. A simple village town where there's a TVET college, they would charge 500 a room, but suddenly somebody shows up at Nespas and they'll charge 2,000 rand a room. You know, and there's no infrastructure. There's just nothing. You know, what are they doing? They're looting Nespas at the bottom, right at the bottom. And it continues like that at every different stage. They overprice, they do that. And before you know it, 60 billion rand is gone. And you're trying to understand how is that possible?
I suppose what happens is you have instances where, you know, there's always going to be problems in government. That's how you respond to it. And to bring up something we talked about last week, you know, where the woman talked about, this friend of Mungo's talked about how, you know, when she doesn't have a problem with AI. Each time she wants to ask somebody something, she speaks to this person on the phone called Chad Duplessis, who tells her everything she needs to know. So we had the instance where government's AI policy, its fabled new AI policy came out, and it itself contained AI hallucinations, which is just deeply embarrassing for one thing. But what the Department of Communications did is it suspended two people in the last couple of days for the irresponsible use of AI tools, which has compromised the policy documents. And then we've seen that in the Department of Home Affairs too, where two individuals were suspended for creating, including, I suppose, AI references that might have been hallucinations in the immigration policy document. So you have these instances that are deeply embarrassing things. It's how you respond to it. That's how you kind of, it's what you do with that, right?
Interestingly, Rob, these are both DA departments. You know, you can imagine how embarrassed they are in the GNU. They just came into the government to actually bring a beautiful, clean, good governance that they're touting in Cape Town, etc. And you begin to wonder, you know, what is going on in Cape Town in terms of their policy formulation. This is quite a very, very embarrassing moment for the DA, Rob. But let me tell you, Rob.
But that's how you respond to it, I suppose. You suspend people, you hold them accountable for what happened.
We'll see what happens, Rob. We'll see what happens. These things happen a lot in government, Rob. A lot of people get those who can be suspended, and you don't see the very big fish getting suspended or kicked out. You know, you just get the officials and all of that. And sometimes when a scandal blows over, Rob, people are back in the office. Sometimes people are put on suspension and paid money every month for years. Lots of people, talking millions, lots of people in government, you know, who legally is very difficult to fire them, but the political pressure is still there, so they stay home and get paid for nothing.
Well, I suppose the Chad Duplessis Award for this week must go to Gwede Mantashe's Department of Minerals and Energy, which released a document saying this is what the new fuel price is going to be based on the, you know, the rising cost of oil. But it messed up the calculation and said diesel would rise by 6.19 a litre as opposed to 5.27. And they said, oh, this was due to a decimal error. But it's another instance of Chad Duplessis, the you know, metaphorical Chad Duplessis getting it wrong in the department. That's just as embarrassing, right?
That's very embarrassing, Rob. But look, AI is here, Rob. And we're going to have these moments. You know, AI tools are being developed. We are trying, because this is communication, this is access to information, we are trying to resist too much regulation of it. I saw in the US that they're talking about vetting AI models before they are released to the public. You know, so this is new stuff. We are going to wrestle with it at every stage, and it's going to embarrass us here and there. You know, so this unfortunately it happened at the Department of Communication. You wouldn't have expected it to happen there. Maybe it could have happened at the Department of Police or Social Development there with CCC Tolashe and her many scandals. But it was embarrassing that happened in communication.
I mean, the police departments and social developments, you think that their policies and ethics policies have been eaten by crocodiles long ago.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Well, everyone, thanks very much for joining us. That's Sharp Sharp for this week. And join us next week for another fascinating, enlightening look at the political environment in South Africa.